This is your ADD cast for Saturday, January 21st, 2006. Welcome, everyone, to another ADD cast.
Welcome to Sprockets. My name is Dita. That's all I was thinking. My name is Sprockets. I am Dita.
Joining us and jumping on my mic time here, unfortunately out of reach of a good slap upside the head, is T. Morris.
I have beer in my hand. Fuck you.
You love saying that on the air, don't you?
Fuck yeah.
Oh, hell yes. Here's to some beers.
Yeah, what are we drinking here?
We are drinking Trader Joe's Winter Double Bock, which is actually brewed by my favorite brewery of the moment, Gordon Biersch Company.
Wow,
isn't that nice?
That's smooth. This is the way I like beer. I'm not a big hoppy man like Evo. I like my beer to. I want it so chunky you'll be tempted to eat it with a fork. That's what I like about
bread in a bottle.
Yeah, man. Bread? Screw that. This is like a four-course meal right
now. Oh, yeah. This is some really good shit.
Yeah. Throw in a blender a steak, some beer, potatoes, gravy, and then the dessert. You just blend it, and you get this.
Oh, yeah. Nice, heavy winter beer.
I like that.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Now, I did confess that I have never heard the ADD cast, and I honestly thought it was like some type of PSA, like a public service podcast. You were talking about, we're going to deal with the epidemic of ADD here on the ADD cast. That's honestly what I thought it was.
No, I look like I have a medical degree?
No!
I design networks for living.
I just thought it was something you were giving back to the community. That's what I seriously thought.
No. The other podcast, the Balticon podcast, where we don't get to curse. That's where I give back to the community, the science fiction community.
Ah, okay.
This is where I have fun.
Oh, okay.
See, this is ADD theater. You know, people can tell the difference about whether I'm on my meds or off my meds because I have ADD.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
that's why I thought.
Yeah.
See, that's why I thought it was a PSA.
Oh no.
That the, you know, you were because you told me you have ADD.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, okay, so this is like. This is like Paul's like humanitarian podcast where he's going to tell people, all right, yes, you know, your life doesn't have to stop because you've got ADD. Look at me. Look at me. I'm podcasting. I thought you were like doing some good. This is your beer cast.
No, you know, we do talk about ADD medication occasionally. We talk about, living with ADD, but ADD is not, you know, I guess it can be a little bit debilitating.
I'm sorry. What were you saying?
Yeah,
okay.
But this is just fucking fun for me, you know.
Okay, cool.
This is not at all what people think. And you know, that is the first time anyone's told me that.
Get out,
because there is. I mean, if you search the podcast directories for ADD, there is some woman who is doing a podcast about ADD, and I haven't listened to that because
even
it sounds
get
clinical.
Me started on that. Let me tell you about how. Podcasting ruined a perfectly good joke. Evo and I are writing Podcasting for Dummies, right?
Yeah.
Which you can find out more at www.teamhorse.com. And we had a joke in there. We're a pretty clever joke, we thought, about, you know, being original in podcasting. I mean, we're talking about sports podcasts. And we said, let's say you want to be the first person to do the official curling podcast. And we got a big laugh out of that, and then so we're in rewrites, and we're in Phoenix, Arizona, and he looks at me and goes, "By the way, T, did you check to see if there were any curling podcasts?" And I looked at Evo and I said, "Evo, I wrote this 2 months ago. You really think someone's going to come up with a curling podcast?" And as those words left my mouth, we just stared at each other, and we said,
"We better check."
Three. Fucking podcasts about fucking curling.
I heard a promo on Adam Curry's Daily Source Code for curling podcasts.
Isn't that scary?
Yeah.
It's frightening,
but
man.
This is what I love about podcasts.
You
it's
can
like,
find it anywhere,
you, man. If you have an interest,
You can make a podcast.
You can make a podcast, and you will find your audience.
And we even did that as an aside. We said, leave it to podcast. We have actually have in the book, leave it to podcast, and can ruin a completely good joke. But you know, we got to give those guys credit. So here's to the curling podcasters, so man.
For next time, make it wiffle ball.
Oh, I guarantee you there's got to be at least 4 wiffle ball podcasts out there because at least I know what wiffle ball is. I've had so many people ask me, what's curling? And I go, well, it's something people are podcasting about. They go, what's podcasting? And I just take them out one punch.
Oh, man. So how do you explain podcasting to people who don't know what it is?
All right. Well, you've heard my show, The Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy. I'm like a pitch meister.
I love your show.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I do.
I've had a great – and let me tell you, I didn't think I would be having this much fun doing it. And I got to give props where props is due. Rob Sawyer, when he was on, my listenership was in like the 100 or so, you know, just like the 100.
Who's Rob Sawyer?
Rob Sawyer. Oh, wow. Being in the science fiction fantasy community, you need to know that name.
Okay.
He won the Hugo and the Nebula all in one year with the book Hominids.
Holy shit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. His moniker is the Dean of Canadian Science Fiction.
Wow.
He's a player. He's a major player. Now, here's the beautiful thing about Sawyer. Couldn't be a nicer guy. I mean, just down to earth, rooted, he's just crazy as fuck.
You know, I love people like that.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I stand by this opinion that fans of science fiction in the United States and fans of science fiction in Canada, two different mindsets completely.
Really?
When you introduce yourself as a science fiction fantasy author, American fans will look at you and go, really? Who are you published with? Canadian fans will look at you and they go, really? What do you write? See the difference?
Oh, yeah.
And Rob has even said, you know, I can't be as cocky in Canada as I am in the United States, because if I'm that way in Canada, they'll roast me alive. So I really dig – I just dig Sawyer. He's a good guy. Well, we did an interview show together. We did an interview for the survival guide. And he was terrific. I mean, he was fun. He was hitting it on all cylinders, and I had a real good time just sitting back and just shooting the breeze with him about the show's about how you market your books once the books are published,
right?
And
I want to throw in that this is good for anyone who needs to market anything. If you've made a game, if you've written a book, it doesn't matter what genre the book is in. You know, if you have, you know, I don't know, etchings that you want to be selling, it's phenomenal advice for everyone.
But here was the thing: when I had Rob on the show, my listenership was modest. It was modest. I mean, you know, and Rob not only told the people on his newsletter and mailing group about the podcast, but he sent word to Locus Online. And Locus is like the trade magazine for science fiction and fantasy. We wound up on the homepage. You go on the homepage and in the sidebar, Rob Sawyer interviewed by T. Morris in podcast. And it was right there. And my listenership has doubled since then.
Sweet.
So I got a lot to thank Rob for. And I mean, I'm quickly approaching the 300 mark, and I'm just thrilled because people are digging it. In fact, I have to wonder how many I've always been curious about the listenership, about whether or not the people I'm listening are just A, interested in what authors do when they're not writing, you know, like how do they really sell their books?
Changing diapers.
Exactly, that kind of thing. Yeah. Which is what I do. My daughter has appeared on both the Moravi Patio book and and in the survival guide. She was in the last survival guide where she sat on my lap. She's like, yeah. But the other one was I needed a really good sound effect of a baby crying. And we had just put her down, and she was throwing a fit. And I said, hold on a second. Keep that up, Serena. Keep that up. And I ran, and I got my camera. And this is before I had my iRiver. And I ran in there, and I recorded her crying. And when I walked out of there with the tape, I said, man, this is great footage. My wife looked at me and said, okay, Kathy Lee. Really nice. Really nice. So, you know, yeah, I felt a bit like that. I had that Kathy Lee vibe happening, and, you know, hopefully my Hopefully it was just a momentary moment, but momentary moment? Oh, shit.
Drink some more beer. And, you know, the thing is, if you were doing that every week, if you were
exploiting your child
on a daily basis, that's a Kathy Lee kind of thing.
That's a Kathy Lee moment. But seriously, I didn't expect to have this much fun talking about marketing. I mean, really, I didn't. But we've been having a really good time on Survival Guide. And I learned when I was trying to play around with the show's format, the one thing everyone's been telling me that I can't cut is the Whiskey Tango Foxtrot moment.
Oh, yes. This is one of those things I wanted to bring up with you.
Oh, shit.
I was mentioned – my promo for the Balticon podcast was mentioned in –
The Balticon podcast, written, produced, and directed by Peter fucking Jackson.
I think not.
It was long enough, baby.
It was 2 minutes and 40-something seconds.
Which is pretty fucking long for
a promo. It's pretty fucking long for a promo, but at the time that I did it, I was listening to Adam Curry on the Daily Source Code, and he was continually saying, what we need are shorter podcasts and longer promos. And this was a couple of months back, and well, and there's my exclamation point.
There's a little bit of General So in there.
good food, man.
Yeah, it was really nice. So as you were saying,
so anyway, I was thinking. Look, I can't do a shorter podcast. I just can't. I like the format I have. They're going to go 30 to 45 minutes with music. They may top out around an hour. That's it. But I want to do a promo. So I did this 2 minute and 48 second promo, and a lot of people loved it, but you and someone else,
Sally Getch. Sally Getch is one of the listeners of the Survival. She's a survivalist.
Okay.
She's one of the Survival Guide listeners. And she said the promo that T. Morris plays in between his breaks is a bit long. And at that time I'd only played one promo that she was critiquing, and it was
mine. So after listening to that, I got two pieces of feedback, and I said, you know, you're right. And I went in and I cut like 45 seconds out of it. I got it down to like a minute and 30. And then I went in and I removed all the chatter from previous episodes and got it down to like 45 seconds. So now there are three promos of the Balticon podcast on the Balticon podcast website, balticonpodcast.org.
Good man.
And, you know, that's the other thing I picked up from you is, like, not to be ashamed to plug the website every chance I get.
Dude, if you don't pimp and whore yourself, no one's going to do it for you.
Yep.
And I'm starting to feel like we're on the Howard Stern show. That was something I must admit, before he went to XM, something I dug about Howard Stern was that whenever he would be in the middle of a sentence or the middle of an interview, he'd just rip one. I mean, just a girl. And I was like, man, that's freedom.
Yep.
That's just artistic freedom at its finest. And then I heard he got down a bit on podcasting. I think it was Slusher. I think Dave Slusher mentioned something in the Evil Genius Chronicles about how he mentioned something about how do I feel about Howard Stern coming down on podcasting. And I tried to find the reference, but and I couldn't find it.
The only thing that I saw recently, and I may be hallucinating, but I thought I saw
hallucinating.
Hallucinating. Yeah.
Another round.
Waitress.
Wench. Beerus.
I thought Howard Stern was actually doing a podcast.
It would shock me if he didn't, but it would because Howard – one thing I'll say about Howard is he tends to be on top of things. He tends to be on top of, well, yeah, that's going to work, but that's not going to work. And I agreed with Howard about his feelings on internet radio.
Yeah.
Now I got friends who run their own internet radio networks. I mean, I interviewed this one this one writer, Jana Oliver. She's on show number 7. Really nice lady, super 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 chick, and she runs the Leisure Talk Radio Network, and it's all online. But the problem I have with internet streaming is audio streaming on the internet is that it's really unreliable. I was talking about that today, and the difference between audio streaming,
yeah,
and podcasting is that audio streaming is just basically the radio through your computer.
Right. And my big problem with it is it's just like radio in terms of time. You have to be, and it's worse than radio.
Because you've got
to
be sitting at your
computer.
You
have to be anchored to your computer for the length of that show.
Provided the stream is working.
I've never had problems with streams not working, but I haven't done that much in the way of listening to streaming radio.
When Michael and Evo were doing Live Fire, it was a 50-50 shot if I was going to get the stream or not, mainly because KFYI just did not give a rat's ass about the stream. And then sometimes it would cut off in the middle of the show, and it was a pain in the ass. And I hate it. I mean, I think Howard was absolutely right. Podcasting, on the other hand, is, podcasting on your terms, on your time.
Right.
And you were asking me earlier, how do I describe to people what podcasting is? And I tell people it is, and I know there are some podcasters that cringe when they hear this, but I really think it is TiVo for audio. It's TiVo for audio because all you're doing is you're programming your aggregator to get this program downloaded on your computer so you can watch it or you can listen to it if you want
to. I still run into a lot of people that don't know what the fuck a TiVo is. A friend of mine who's like 10 years older than I, he's been, I've known this guy for almost 20 years. Mm. He's in my house every couple of months. I finally convinced him to get a TiVo this month. And
hey, I just
don't get it. I don't understand why everyone on the planet does not get how liberating it is to own a TiVo.
It's a learning curve. I just got TiVo last month for the first time.
Did you which one did you get?
We got the DirecTV. We got DVR.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the one that I love.
Yeah. And I didn't realize how cool it was until I was just tuned out. I was tuned out and I was like doing something online.
Yeah.
And I got this little alert message. And I said, and it said that it was getting ready to record something. I'm like, it's Sunday night, 8 o'clock. What the? Holy shit, 24 is about to start. I mean, because I nearly missed the premiere of 20. And listen, you think I'm a pisser. When I'm late to a panel or a podcast or a podcast feed won't upload, that is nothing to me missing one freaking second with Jack motherfucking Bauer. I love my 24. You do not get between me and my 24. When the phone rings and 24 is on, I don't say hello or I don't say
But you can if you have a TiVo.
True.
You can pause
it. But I still don't care. I will get on the phone and this is just old school. I mean, I'm still new with the TiVo, so I'm still learning how the thing works. But I will pick up the phone and I will go, "What do you want?" And unless the voice on the other line is Jack Bauer, well, I'm be like, you call me back in 1 hour, okay?
See, you haven't had it for a while yet. No, but after you've had it for a while, you could be in the middle of the climax of the best Battlestar Galactica episode ever, and you'll just reach out and hit pause.
Really?
Pick up the phone.
What do you want?
If it's somebody, it's like, oh, Mom never calls me at 10 o'clock on a Friday night. Maybe I should get this and pause.
Right.
And then you just, you back it up 5 minutes or something and you keep going.
Yeah, I think I'm still getting used to it because I honestly thought that at one point you could watch another channel while having your DVR working.
Yeah, you can.
Well, apparently mine didn't.
But you can record two programs simultaneously if you've got it hooked up properly.
Then I don't think we have it hooked up properly. But we're still playing with it.
Okay. I'll show you a couple of things with mine. I'm gonna
do this podcast and I gotta get home because I got a sick wife and a sick baby.
Takes 30 seconds. It'll take 30 seconds. All right. Apologies to the wife. Let's take a break for a second and we'll be right back.
Dang, that was
quick. Good news, everyone. Several years ago I tried to log on to AOL and it just went through. We're online.
www.balticonpodcast.org.
Let the Balticon Podcast take you inside the minds of the people who make science fiction happen. Get the scoop on what's happening in science fiction from authors, techies, and scientists. We guarantee that you'll be entertained and enlightened. Here are a few of the things we've talked about in past episodes.
Eric Raymond, the third most famous geek in the world.
And I walked into the conference center there, and I knew that I was not dealing with your father's IBM. I can remember when IBM was the great enemy of all hackers. The Cathedral and the Bazaar.
The Cathedral and the Bazaar.
In 1998, when I started the open source propaganda campaign, never in my wildest dreams did I imagine that it was IBM I was going to help turn over.
Keith DeCandido.
Most of what I do are media tie-in novels. Star Trek novels. I did the first novel based on Farscape. I've also done a bunch of movie novelizations, including both Resident Evil movies and the Joss Whedon movie Serenity that's coming out in September.
The Balticon Podcast. Great interviews with the people who make science fiction happen. Authors, fans, and honest-to-God scientists. And we play music at the end. Search for Balticon in iTunes or visit us at www.balticonpodcast.org.
Chick only made you nuts, man. She cheated on you how many times?
8.5.
8.5?
Party at John Kay's senior year. I get blitzed, pass out in his bedroom. Caitlin comes in and jumps all over me.
So that's cheating?
No, in the middle of it, she called me Brad.
She called you Brad?
She called me Brad.
Now, that's not cheating. People say crazy shit during sex. One time I called this girl Mom.
A lone starship manned by a ragtag group of heroes hurtling through the barriers of time and space in a never-ending pursuit to right the wrongs of incredibly villainous villains. One man alone leads them in their quest. He is the world's most brilliant scientist, Dr. Floyd. And these are your radio adventures of Dr. Floyd. When Dr. Floyd's time and space travel device is stolen by his arch-nemesis, the vile Dr. Steve, he must race through time and space in a never-ending quest to retrieve it. Along with his young protege, Dr. Grant, and their faithful robot companionships, Dr. Floyd will stop at nothing to reclaim the stolen time and space travel device and bring Dr. Steve to justice.
I will stop at nothing to reclaim that time and space travel device and bring you to justice, Dr. Steve.
Try as you like, Floyd. You'll never be able to... Wait a minute. Didn't the narrator just say that?
Say what?
The line you just said about stopping at nothing to reclaim the time and space travel device and bring me to justice.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe he did. What?
Well, I think it's pointless if the narrator gives out exposition on the plot and then you reiterate it. I mean, that seems silly.
Well, to an evil mind like yours, Dr. Steve, I'm sure it sounds quite silly. But I'm telling you now, I will stop at nothing to reclaim the time and space travel device and bring you to justice!
No, brother.
Yes, fans, set your imagination to fun. This is the Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd, brought to you via podcast by drfloyd.com. That's drfloyd.com. New episodes of the podcast arrive every Monday. Subscribe now or regret it for the rest of your life. drfloyd.com. That's drfloyd.com.
Say something, anything.
Test 1, 2, 3.
Anything but that.
And we're back.
Let me tell you something about Keith DeCandido.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That guy farts and he has a novel. You know, I mean, I swear to Christ. Man, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Keith is a hoot. He really is. He's a hoot. But
he was a great interview.
God damn, that guy just, he just goes, here's a novel. You know, I don't know how he does it. I mean, the fact that it took him weeks. I repeat, weeks to write the novelization of Serenity. I don't know how he does it. I mean, obviously, A, he does not have children. And B, I heard...
I'm thinking he doesn't have ADD either.
No. In fact, if there's anyone who has the two-focused syndrome, it's Keith DeCandido. But no, I love the guy, but man, if there's a guy I can be playfully jealous about, it's him. Because...
He's prolific.
Yeah. Yeah. He just cranks him out, man. He cranks him. I mean, he really is he's like the Stephen King of media tie-in novels. And I've heard some people say, I actually heard some authors say, well, media tie-in novels aren't really novels. You're working in someone else's world. All the hard stuff is taken care of. Yada, yada, yada. And I just want to.
What a crock of shit.
Tell me about it. I really want to go, yeah, say that to Keith DeCandido's face. Say that to Keith motherfucking DeCandido's face.
I've spent a year working on my book.
Yeah.
And, you know, I worked my ass off on it. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for anyone who can fill up as many pages as he does in a year.
Yeah.
Because he ain't cutting and pasting shit out of a script.
I think it's harder. I honestly think it's harder to write a media tie-in novel. I mean, we actually had this discussion at Balticon last year with Will McDermott.
Yeah.
I think it's tougher because you are writing in someone else's world. You are writing in someone else's universe, and you've got to adhere to their rules, even if you don't like their rules. And... And I know that with Keith, I have a newfound respect for what he does, mainly because I tried to write a Farscape novel as well, even after Farscape had been canceled, and I wanted to go on ahead and just try and finish a Farscape tie-in novel. Actually, no, I'm sorry, this is before Farscape was canceled. And it was I was going to write it based on Aaron's son's pregnancy. And as I'm writing it, and this was set months, or if not a year down the road from when Aaron's son becomes preggers, I'm working on it, and in one episode, I had to completely rewrite the first two chapters because they had changed something. Because of one thing a character said, I said, well, wait a minute, I guess I can't use that because I said this. And so I had to go back and I had to change it and all this stuff. And I'm sure that's got to be how – and that makes me even more respectful of what Keith does, because Keith could have that whole thing cranked out and then someone goes, well, yeah, you said this, but if you notice in this episode we said this. And then Keith has to go back and fix it.
Yeah, and you know, this is the age in which – you know, people are not as forgiving about what's happened before as they were, you know, back in the 60s and 70s when they were doing Star Trek and people weren't really doing any continuity checking.
Yeah, I got my first taste of that with I was actually expecting it with with Moravi.
Yeah.
I was actually expecting it because I know I caught a really glaring screw up on my part. I was really proud of myself because I was incorporating so much history into this fantasy, and yet this one screw up got past me. I mentioned Letters of Mark, which is what it's basically like the whole IMF with privateers. You know, no. If you have this document, you get a pass, but if you're caught without it, then you know your knowledge will be disavowed and all this stuff.
Well, it goes back to, you know, the French and the English naval wars,
right,
of previous centuries. If you were a pirate, you would get hanged by both sides if they caught you. But if you got a letter of marque, basically you got legalized by one side to attack the shipping of the other side. And it basically said, we are giving you license to go and pillage, you know, their merchant shipping and bring it back to us.
It was the hall pass of the English Channel, basically.
Oh, yeah.
But the problem was I spelled letters of marque M-A-R-K.
No.
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 It is M-A-R-Q-U-E.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I had a total brain fart, and that got past me. But
it was your world, and in your world, it could be spelled that way.
No. I wasn't going to play that game. You know, that's a fucking cop-out. That is a motherfucking cop-out by any author who says, well, it's my rule. No, man, you fucked up. You dropped the motherfucking ball. No, I'm not buying it. And I actually talked to a book critic. She calls herself the Bonnie Buccaneer, and she only reviews pirate books and pirate fiction.
Cool.
And she, oh, yeah, the Bonnie Buccaneer. I'll send you the link. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You can put it in the show notes. Well, she was telling me about this, and she said, you realize? And I said, yeah. And she said, okay, I'm going to let that slide because I enjoyed the book so much. Just don't let it happen again.
We will be watching your team, Morris.
Yes, just as you wouldn't misspell it. But yet here we are. Thank you, Edna.
I love you. Bye-bye.
She actually has a copy of Legacy of Moravia, and I was very proud of myself because in Legacy, the sequel to Moravia, in Legacy of Moravia, I made sure Letters of Mark was spelled M-A-R-Q-U motherfucking E. And it was right, and I was happy with it, and I was, you know, I'm all good with that. But I just recently got an email from a friend of mine who is this historian buff.
Yeah.
And man, she just raked me over the coals. I mean, just talking about how Lord Seymour would have never been called Lord Seymour in court, and Catherine Parr would have never done this, and yada, and just running down all these lists of titles that I'd screwed up, and I was like, okay, time out. Now, there's the difference between a really bad screw up like the Letters of Mark, and then making sure that all the titles and all the people are referred to in a proper way. First off, I can be as historically accurate in historical fantasy as much as the story allows me to be.
See, well, let me throw something in here. Because one of the problems that I have with a lot of fantasy books where the author writes a lot of history is that everyone agrees on the history. It's like the author comes up with the history, and then either people know it or they don't know it.
Right.
But they're never in disagreement about it. And, you know, you could have an entire country that you know, that you know, that thinks that, oh, I don't know, the outcome of this war came out the way that it was because there was a snowstorm, and, you know, and, right, and one side lost because they couldn't see in the snow or they weren't prepared for the snow. And everyone else in that world could know the absolute fact that that battle took place in summer.
Right.
And that there was no snowstorm. But these guys got it wrong. Somewhere it crept into their history, the fallacy that there was a snowstorm. You know, and no, everyone agrees. You know, they may disagree about, you know, why they won a battle, but, you know, but they never disagree on something really bloody major, like, oh yeah, the mountain opened up and swallowed the army from the north. You know, and,
but you got the history wrong.
No, you know, and that's the thing is, people get history wrong all the fucking time. All you have to do is listen to Skepticality,
yeah, but
and,
history,
and or God forbid, read anything by Washington Irving. You know, this guy has just fucked history up one side and down the other, but so many people in this country take it as fact.
Well, you see that, and that's the thing. It kind of goes to, here's a good example of you know, when people, when authors screw around with history or real life events, and then people just take it way too seriously. The Da Vinci Code. I loved The Da Vinci Code. Why? Because it was a good work of fiction. It was just a fun read. And I liked the idea of like, okay, maybe this is it. Maybe this. I mean, I know. I was really, really just blown away when I read the description of The Last Supper. And the first thing I did, I went. I mean, we're talking, I got off the metro. I got into where I was temping. I went online and I typed in a Google search. I looked at it. I was like, holy shit, there it is. And I thought it was cool. Now, did I think it was actual fact? Did I think that, you know, that all this stuff was, you know, that people are
that if you treat the Bible like a crossword puzzle and randomly look at things on a diagonal, depending on whose printing press was used or which version was used, you'll find the odd things?
Now we're getting into even more murky waters because you're talking to a born-again Christian. Now, yeah, a born-again Christian that reads and writes science fiction and fantasy. Go fig. I'm a walking contradiction. But the point I'm getting at is that the people took the history of what the Da Vinci Code was doing as fact. And I'm sitting there going, no, what Dan Brown was doing, at least for me, what Dan Brown was doing was taking a few facts here and a few facts there and a few facts here and a few facts there and weaving this really, really cool
story.
Chase thriller, treasure hunt kind of thing. It's no different than National Treasure. It is no different than National Treasure. And National Treasure, all they did was take a few quirky little things about Ben Franklin and the quirky little things about the Freemasons. I mean, come on. How secret is a society that has a giant fucking building in the middle of Alexandria? Okay?
Okay. this goes back to a whole bunch of things about pagans that I have a problem with. Is like, you know, it's, all of this stuff is secret. But go buy my book.
Yeah, exactly.
I have managed to get permission of the masters who will kill you. At the mere utterance of any of these things, I've gotten permission to put this in press.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
You
can't have a secret society and have a big giant building in Alexandria and a book on the protocols of being a Mason.
Yeah, exactly. And on top of all that, but I was taking a task about this whole thing with, you know, that Lord Seymour wouldn't be called Lord Seymour. And the way I describe both Moravia and Legacy Moravia, and even Billabub Battings to a point, I say that if you want a book on history, then get a book on history. This is a book where I use history not necessarily to a point of where it suits me, but if I was so historically accurate about my pirates, for example, in Moravia and Legacy Moravia, Ascana would have nothing to do with Wraith because most of Wraith's original teeth would be missing. He would only be bathing once a month. During the love scene, she would be, you know, she would take a gasp, not at his, you know, huge throbbing manhood, but of all the oozing pustules that be covering his body because he'd be ravaged by all these, you know, diseases. I mean, come on. I can only be as historically accurate as the story allows me to be.
Right.
Now with Billy, I could be a little more accurate because
you are more in this world.
Yes. And on top of that, when you read historical resources, you always have to question who's writing it, because one historical reference will look back on Henry VIII and say it was one of the most important ages of the time, and that Henry VIII was one of the greatest rulers. Was one of the greatest rulers of the British monarchy. You will pick up another resource, and it will say that Henry was a devious son of a bitch, and he was a backstabbing bastard, and all these things.
He raped cattle and stampeded women.
Exactly. You know, and so history, the further back you go, gets extremely subjective. I was taken to task for it the first time from a fan, not with Legacy, but with Billy. This guy comes up and he goes, you know, I was at your reading and I noticed that you were talking about the woman with the long blonde with the long black hair. Well, you know, hair was cut pretty short in the 20s. And I just nodded and I was very pleasant and I said, okay, that's fine, but this is set in 1929. You're thinking of the flappers of the 1920s, 21, 22, 23. That was when the short cropped look was looking really sharp. They started wearing their hair long by the 30s, but this is a socialite, which means she was in touch with what was going on in Paris, and in Paris in 29, women like their hair long. The guy took a step back, wound up buying my book. So I made the sale, but the point I was getting at was that, you know, you got to be – yeah, I mean, I love my science fiction fantasy fans. I love them to death, but I'm going to tell you what. You start fucking around with history, and they will take you to task.
Oh, yeah.
You got to be careful about that.
All right. So I just want to go back and hit you on the religious thing for a second.
God, here we go.
Have you ever seen a comparative Bible?
You mean as in a King James and a New International Version?
Oh, no. I'm talking about one that's about the size of an unabridged dictionary, and you open it up, and there are six Bibles laid out in six columns, and they are chapter and verse equivalent across and you'll have, you know, King James, New International, Roman Orthodox. I don't know.
Right.
I'm Jewish.
Have I ever seen one of those? No. Do I know they exist? Yes. In fact, we were just talking about this in my church last week. We were talking about all the different Bibles that were out there, and you know where their resources came from, and where, you know, whichever Bible you choose. The point is that it's got to be the Bible that suits you best.
What?
And I know that sounds even more hinky, and I'm sure that Derek
See,
is.
No, I think Derek that's very Sweeney. Enlightened. I think that's a very enlightened view.
Okay.
Because if you take that view that I'm choosing a Bible that suits me, then you have already grasped the fact that there is more than one translation of the Bible, and that your view of it is one that you have chosen to suit you, and not the cast in stone, always been this way, you know, back to the dawn of time, and everyone else is wrong. And that's the problem that I find with a lot of people that read the Bible in English and have only read it in English, is that they don't read ancient Aramaic.
And
that's what it was written in.
When you're taking the literal translations, you know, when you know, if we were following the Bible literally, there'd still be some things going on that really would not be looked favorably upon.
I mean, you would be able to sell your daughter,
right?
If
you have slaves,
if your wife used any blended fabrics. You know, bought a cotton polyester shirt at the Walmart. You could stone her to death.
Right. I mean,
with stones, not with pot.
Right.
But my point in all of this is this has been translated over and over again, and for the people, you know, who want to look at it through a very, very narrow pair of blinders, they really need to look at a comparative Bible, because it is their Bible. And the thing that really got me, I bought one of these for a friend of mine who was Italian, he still is Italian.
Did he get his Italian? Or
no,
vote?
No,
what
but
happened?
he was like Italian, but he was like Roman Catholic.
Right.
And he became born again, and he started talking some things that I thought were rather weird.
Right.
So I bought him a comparative Bible, and it really opened his eyes to the fact that almost no one in the United States has really read the Bible because they don't read ancient Aramaic.
Right.
You know, and just one mistranslation that I'm aware of, and this is from the Latin to the English, is the bit about thou shalt not suffer a witch. What it actually says in Latin is thou shalt not suffer a poisoner. And somewhere in a translation somewhere, it became witch.
And if we keep going with that, if someone says, thou shalt not suffer watching Tom Cruise in Cocktail. So you have to be real careful about that whole poisoner thing.
You really do.
Yeah, you do. You have to.
You really do. And if you've actually gone through and taken the time to pick out a Bible that suits you, then you are far more enlightened than the small but vocal minority that pisses the fuck out of me. that's the thing is they are a small but vocal minority.
And sadly they have
get media coverage.
Not only do they get media coverage, but they tend to get a lot of support from administration and things like that because of the whole voter issue. And that could open up an entirely different can of worms for this podcast. I just know that whenever Pat Robertson says something really stupid, I have to tell myself, okay, you know, he's my Christian brother, which means I can choose to pick my friends, but I'm stuck with my relatives. And he's the relative that whenever I see him coming at the family reunion, I just go, oh Christ, here comes crazy Uncle Pat.
He's my bald Uncle Ted,
who
beats his wife and drives a cab and only shows up to family functions if there's an open bar.
Bingo. Yeah, that's our boy Pat.
Yep. All right, and on that note, I'm
on
going
that
to,
cheerful note,
I am going to dedicate the following two songs.
Oh, God,
you're
going to play that sex song, aren't you?
I am. to the small but vocal minority that not only doesn't have a clue, but they don't have a sense of humor.
Bada-bing.
And before I do that, let me state that this podcast is brought to you under a Creative Commons 2.5 attribution non-commercial license. And that we hope you take some time to check out our website, and very soon we will be releasing our new dynamic content website at addcast.net.
Which, by the way, is not a PSA podcast.
Nor a PMS podcast.
Nor a PPC podcast. Pretty Person Cylon podcast.
Nope. none of the above.
Although the next time I come in for ADD, this time I'm going to bring the beer next time, and then we can talk about Pretty People Cylons.
Oh, God.
My girl Grace Park.
What's her name? Trisha Helfer?
Yeah.
Did you see the shot of her? There was a shot of her. It was like the last shot where Baltar was saying how bored he was of flashing back to his old house on Caprica. I swear to God, if that camera was a millimeter away from where its mark was, you would be able to see right into her crotch. Mm. I mean, everything.
I remember the shot you were talking about.
There were the tiniest strips of fabric were strategically placed.
Don't get me wrong.
She is just drop dead gorgeous.
See, I think she's beautiful. But the one that I got the steam and undies for is Grace Park. Ah, man, Grace Park. Oh,
Boomer.
Oh, yeah. In fact,
she is gorgeous.
The scene where Grace Park goes into the Base Star and all those naked boomers come at her.
Yeah.
And they, you know, Ron Moore in his podcast was talking about how they had to strategically place hair and shadow and all this stuff to cover up the naughty bits. I was like, oh, was that really necessary? And then a friend of mine, bastard, Joe Murphy, Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas in the Dragon Page. He says, well, you know about her Maxim shots. And I said, her what?
Holy shit.
She did some cover shots for Maxim magazine.
When?
Just do a search for Grace Park.
Google
Grace Park images.
I need to end this podcast right now and start playing this music. Let's see. Anything I didn't cover. Website, addcast.net. Email, addcast@gmail.com. Send us some freaking feedback, people. There are a couple of you that are emailing me, and I'm emailing y'all back, and I'd really like to get to the point where there are so many people emailing me that I don't have the time.
Let us know you're out there.
That's right. Give us a little feedback. We love you all. And remember, you can't control the stimulus. Control the response.
Everyone else has had more sex than me. Thank you.
Grass below you, sky above. Celebrate spring with a crazy little thing information. I cried a little when he flew away. I watched an episode of the People's Court and I tried to plan my day. I called up my old lady. She wasn't home, so I called my girl. I asked her if she'd like to join me as I entertain the world. And I said, ooh, child, I bring a blanket and I promise I will brush the ants off. Ooh, child, you're gonna like it when we're taking each other's pants off outside. 'Cause it's the first of me, first of me. Outdoor fucking starts today. So bring your favorite lady, or at least your favorite thing. Water's not cold, baby, dip in your big toe. Maybe I'll see you in for Grande Delecto. Grass below you, sky above. Celebrate spring with a crazy little thing called fucking outside. So we went to the park together. We were walking in the midday sun. Met all kinds of people and we fucked everyone. We fucked the lady who sells ice cream. We fucked the man with a tan sharp hair. Everyone who needed fucking well then they got fucked today. So come on, ooh, child, open your mind and your heart. Feel the spirit moving through you. Child, you feel the warmth of the love when I sing it to you outside. 'Cause it's the first of me, first of me. Outdoor fucking starts today. Bring your favorite lady, or at least your favorite thing. Water's not cold, baby, dip in your big toe. Maybe I'll see you in for Grande Delecto. Grass below you, sky above. Celebrate spring with a crazy little thing called fucking outside. Fucking outside. Fucking outside.